you wake in a strange room. Your clothes are foreign, and the walls are covered in objects from a different world. You don't know where or when you are, or if you're still dreaming. There are footsteps in the hall. Jumping up, you race out of the room and into the streets. You have just entered the Twilight Histories.
Hi, I'm Jordan Harbour, and thank you for tuning into the Twilight Histories on our 10th anniversary. Today, you will hear part 5 of Blue Dragons. If you're enjoying this series, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. It takes so little time, but it's so meaningful. Ratings is how Apple knows if the Twilight Histories is worth sharing. When we don't get ratings, I've noticed the show starts to slip a little into that dark void of obscurity. But I've also noticed whenever someone leaves a few kind words, the show bounces up again. I love reading your words. When I see a new review, I get excited. Not only are your reviews nice to read, but they also help the show far beyond what you could imagine for such a simple thing. And if you want to do something more, come join our Patreon community. I just launched part 2 of a multi-part series by our new guy, Aaron Lund. He nailed it. I think it's one of the most brilliant things I've heard on this show. I've been passing my knowledge on to Aaron for months now, teaching him how to create Twilight History shows, and I've been posting his work in Patreon as he develops it. I think his latest work, OMG Dailies, is a home run. It's really cool. As a quick synopsis, you have a bunch of world splitters gathered together at a diner in some alternate universe, comparing their strangest adventures. Aaron flexes his creative muscles in this show, and many times he made my eyes bulge with his wild worlds. He's got the storytelling down, the voice acting, the audio production. He's on fire. And you can hear OMG Dailies when you join us in Patreon at the recruit level or higher. And that's it for news. Let's move on to today's show, Blue Dragons Part 5, by myself, Jordan Harbour.
What kind of creature are you? The dinosaur says.
I'm human. Are you a Tarian?
Yes.
I didn't think there were any Tarians.
Did you think we were mythical creatures?
No, I just thought you were all gone.
What gave you that idea? More importantly, what are you, and where did you come from?
That depends. Are you a friend of that thing that calls itself the Nest?
The Tarian looked surprised, then thoughtful. No, I am not its friend. But now you have to answer me. What are you, and where did you come from?
As I said, I'm human. I'm from Earth.
Earth, I understand. Human, I do not. How do you speak my language? And how did you get to Venus?
I don't know why I speak Tarian, but I can tell you how I got here. I was lured into the Nest. The machine thought I was a security threat, and it tried to kill me. I managed to escape through a door, as it called it, and here I am.
A security threat? Interesting. I wonder why the Nest thought that. You're so small.
You aren't going to eat me, are you?
The Tarian laughs. No, I'm not going to eat you. I tend not to eat things that talk.
Good. Can you help me, then? The Nest said it was going to hunt me down.
Maybe. Hop on, the dinosaur says, and shifts its weight to make room for you on the raft. You climb up. The Tarian rose with its huge oar, which looks like a debarked tree, though a very strange tree. All the foliage is strange in this swamp. It has a kind of prehistoric look to it, which makes sense considering you're sitting on a raft with a dinosaur. Next to you on the raft is a net with an assortment of human-sized creatures. They're wet and scaly, and could be either lizards or fish. Some have razor-sharp teeth. All their skulls are crushed.
Tarion Zambros, please stand aside,
comes a commanding voice. You look around and see 5 small flying robots. They're the same type that you saw at the atmospheric regulator. You remember the laser that hit your hand and the warning that it could get hotter. The robots circle around the raft.
What do you want, Nest? The human. Please give us the human. We do not wish conflict with Atarian, though we will make an exception in this case.
I'll only let the human go if you can convince me to let it go.
The robots bob for a moment as though contemplating.
Very well, Tarion Zambros. We will try to convince you, but if we cannot, we will still destroy the human, and you if necessary.
Very well,
Zambros says. You feel your heart thumping in your chest. It sounds like you're going to be killed either way. The Nest Bot begins.
The human traveled from a different universe that has the technology to split worlds. That means it can tunnel through a wormhole from one universe to the next, without concern for space or time. It is theoretically possible for the human to split to an earlier state of our universe and cause us to never exist. This is a maximum security threat. The human must be eliminated immediately.
I see. Little human, is it your plan to do this?
Of course not. I'm here to learn something about your technology. Why would I come here just to destroy you?
That seems reasonable, doesn't it, Nest? The human is here to explore and learn from us.
The human's intentions are not important. The possibility exists that it could destroy us. Therefore, the human must be destroyed.
Don't you think that by making enemies of this human, you're creating the very circumstances you fear?
Not if it's annihilated. The situation is intolerable, regardless of the human's sentiments. Now we have explained ourselves. Please give us the human. We do not wish to hurt Atarian, but we will do so for the greater good.
The Atarian moves towards you with lightning speed. You cower into the fetal position. The raft rocks and you hear 5 loud blasts.
It's okay, little human, the Atarian says.
It pats you gently. You uncover your face. The Atarian is holding what looks like a large gun of some kind, its barrel smoking.
Would be the size of a bazooka if you were to hold it.
You look around the swamp. The robots are gone, replaced by 5 boiling impressions in the water.
You shot them?
Yes. It was not very convincing.
The Atarian rows you to a village. Doesn't look that much different from a village you could find in some remote corner of your world, though the huts are significantly larger, and the beings inhabiting them are giant, white-scaled dinosaurs as large as dump trucks. You feel a sudden and deep terror as you remember the last village you were brought to, the one with the rat creatures. But you see no hint of bloodlust in these beings' gentle eyes, and the fear soon passes. How strange that you could find a species of dinosaur more comforting than a mammal.
Look what I found in the swamp, your Atarian friend says.
What is it, Zambros? One of the villagers says.
It's a human. It looks to be some kind of hairless mammal, though this one is intelligent. More importantly, the Nest is scared of it.
Scared of it? It's so small.
Even so, the Nest wants it dead.
The Atarians gather around and speak to each other in deep, hushed tones. Their curiosity turns to fear.
Do you think it's wise to bring the human here? Says one of them. We have an agreement with the Nest. If we're not a threat, it won't destroy us. Won't this break our agreement?
Even so, it may be worth the risk.
How much time do we have?
not much. Net security will be here soon, I'm sure, so my advice is that we consider this quickly.
Does it speak?
Yes. Say something, little human.
Well, hi, everyone. One of the older Taurians steps forward.
Tell us, human, why is the nest so scared of you?
The nest believes that if I go back in time, I can destroy it before it exists.
You can travel through time?
In a sense, yes.
But if you do as the nest fears, won't that end our existence too?
Yes, I guess so.
Forgive me, little human, but we have a life here and would like to continue to live, even if it's not in the great cities of Earth as we would prefer.
Yeah, I can appreciate that.
Forgive me, Elder Yamon, Zambros says. My understanding is that this outcome is a thought experiment taken by the nest to the absurd. The human's intentions are to explore and learn from us, not to destroy us. The Elder looks at you.
Is that true?
Yes, I have no desire to cause you harm. I'm here to learn.
Is that the only reason the nest is afraid of you?
Yes, I think so.
So if this outcome the nest fears is absurd, how is this human useful to us? More to the point, Zambros, is the risk worth the reward? And what is the reward? All respect granted to your immense intellect.
That I do not know. But what I am sure of is that the nest is afraid of this human. As afraid as it's possible for it to be. It is causing it to act irrational. We may be able to turn this to our advantage somehow, though I do not yet know how at the moment.
The old Taurian called Yamon looks thoughtful.
I see. Yes, I do see. Though, like you, I'm not sure how to use this to our advantage. Little human, why are you here exactly? What are you trying to learn?
Well, my mission is to find the plans for your atmospheric regulators. My people are interested in building them.
You have a problem with your planet's atmosphere?
No, they just want to terraform Venus and maybe some other planets. We searched many worlds and discovered that you have this technology, so I'm here to learn about that.
Ah, fine. You have found an appropriate world, then. If we can get you the information you seek, would you be willing to help us in turn?
Maybe. Depends if it gets me killed.
It may, but your chances of survival are much higher with our help than without it.
Fair enough. Okay, what do you want me to do?
I don't know just yet. I'm searching for a seedling of an idea.
Okay, well, why don't you tell me what you want out of this? What's your endgame?
Our endgame?
What we want is to return to Earth. We want the tyranny of the nest to end. We want to return to live in cities again, like our ancestors.
We want to be free to wander wherever we please, and not be marooned here on Venus.
So the nest keeps you locked away on Venus, eh? It seems to have done that to your friends in the virtual state, too.
Ah, so you know about the Ancient Ones.
Yeah, okay. So you want to return to Earth. You want the nest robot gone. I think we can work with that.
Are you being trite, little human? Or do you have an idea of how you could be useful to us?
I'm not sure. Let me think. The Taurians look gloomy. An image of April flashes through your mind. Earth. 3 moons. How many moons has it been so far? 1? It's hard to tell when you're on a different planet, especially one that doesn't have a moon.
Look, you say. You think the nest is so smart. It's not. It's an idiot. It thought I was its greatest enemy, so it brought me right to the center of its brain to interrogate me.
Not what you do with your maximum security threat. I was right there. I know exactly how to get there again if I can get back to Earth. And if I can get back there, I can destroy it.
How?
You tell me. Get me a bomb or one of your ray guns or something. But mark my words, you get me back to Earth, and I'll make a mess out of it. The The Tarians look thoughtful, but sad.
I'm afraid we don't have a way to get back to Earth. Now hold on. The nest bots, they go back and forth all the time, don't they?
Do you know where their doors are?
No. We cannot tell where the doors will open. One of their security measures seems to be to generate doors at randomly generated locations. There may be another way,
a young-looking Tarian says. Everyone looks surprised to hear her speak.
What is that?
The elder Yamon says.
The tunnel.
The Tarians laugh.
Young one, how will the tunnel help us get the human to Earth?
Where do you think the tunnel leads? Right into the egg. And the egg is right in the middle of the nest back on Earth.
Yes, but what of it? How will the human get out of the egg on the other side when its body is here?
Young Tarian opens her mouth, but stutters and gives up.
I regret there is no way for us to get you to Earth. Maybe if you were a Jaron, you could fly up to one of their ships and leave with them. But for us to get you there, we simply cannot. The nest ensures we do not have the technology to threaten it in any meaningful way, which means we are trapped on Venus. And that is the problem we're trying to solve.
Tell me more about this tunnel, you say. The Tarians look at one another with flashes of emotions you can't quite catch.
You know it best. You explain it, young Rama,
the elder Yamon says.
Okay, well, the tunnel is a way to access the egg.
The egg being the place where your friends, the Ancient Ones, as you call them, are trapped in the virtual state?
That's right. Though they are not our friends, we can't communicate with them.
Where is this tunnel?
It's in the atmospheric regulator.
Sorry, what? Did you say atmospheric regulator?
Yes. When you mentioned it, it reminded me of the tunnel.
It was young Rama who found it,
Yamon says. She glows with pride. Aren't they guarded by nest bots?
No, not very well. We're a long way from the nest, and the regulators seem to be low priority for them. The further you are from the nest, the less they seem to care.
Right, but why the tunnel? What's the point of it? Wouldn't that be a security threat?
Well, it's an ancient technology from when the Tarians were more free and than they are today. I don't really know.
But it's definitely at one of your atmospheric regulators, and you can get in.
Yes.
Do you know if it's possible to get any of the plans from there? Are there any blueprints or schematics?
I don't know, but I'm sure you could find something like that in the virtual state. Everything's stored there. If you can figure out how to get it, it's pretty confusing in there.
Confusing how?
Well,
Zambros interrupts.
What she means is that it is difficult for us to comprehend. I've gone through the tunnel myself. The Ancient Ones have had millions of years to build their world, and they've taken it in a very different direction than the world we live in.
What does that even mean?
I wish I could tell you.
Okay, well, never mind. Why don't you get me there, and then we'll take it from there?
That is not a plan,
Yamon says. No, but it's the start of a plan, and considering our timeline, that's probably about as good as we're going to get right now.
Zambros rows with his great oar. The smaller Rama sits next to him, looking out across the swamp. You follow her gaze. The fog is lifting, and you can see off in the distance the long necks of dinosaurs rising above the foliage. A swarm of flying pterodactyls circles above, and there, high up in the yellow-blue sky, are the hazy shapes of flying ships.
What are those, you say?
Jarons, Zambros says.
I've heard that word. Remind me.
The Jarons are a different species from us. They aren't as civilized, you could say. More violent.
They also want to take back Earth from the Nest. Wait, now I remember. The Nest mentioned them. Are they blue?
Yes.
The Nest said they were in a different star system.
Yes, but the Earth is their original home. All intelligent species were cast from it by the Nest. The Earth is the great prize, the garden world. By the looks of it, the Jarns are preparing for another assault. I haven't seen them in our skies for 100 years.
Do you think they'll win?
They came close last time, so perhaps.
What happened last time?
Oh, the Jarns appeared as they are now, a large fleet of flying terrors. They attacked the Nest and were scattered, their ships destroyed. The Nest hunted them down, and they had to return to their distant solar system.
Huh. Back on Earth, I came upon a tribe of furred creatures. They used to live in primitive cities with stone pyramids, but now they live in trees. They said the blue dragons had destroyed their cities and slaughtered them.
That's probably true enough. Some of the Jarns must surely have been stranded on Earth, and they would have been hungry.
You think it was just a bunch of maroon Jarns? They were just foraging for food and destroyed a whole civilization?
Of course. But if it wasn't the Jarns, these creatures would have been destroyed by the Nest in time. Given their advances in intelligence and organization, as you describe it, the Nest might soon have decided they were a security threat. Nothing intelligent can live on Earth.
Well, it seems amazing to me that some scraggly crew on a downed ship could have wiped out a whole civilization just by foraging for food. The creatures built their whole religion around that event.
If you were to see the Jarns, you would not think it so strange. Even one Jarn, even unarmed, could destroy my whole village if it wanted to. With modern weapons, as I'm sure they had, killing your creatures would have been as easy as clubbing fish in a shallow swamp.
How was the Nest able to defeat them if they're so strong?
The Nest was stronger. So you see our skepticism about your plan to walk into the Nest and destroy it.
You see the outline of an atmospheric regulator take form in the distance, a great billowing white cloud rising from its yawning funnel. How long will it take us to get there?
Oh, we'll probably be there by this evening. You might as well get comfortable.
Your mind leaps to April, and you feel a cold sweat. How long has it been? Surely 2 moons by now. By your mental clock, it feels like 2 moons, but you can't be sure. Not on a different planet that doesn't even have a moon. Time is running out. There was only ever a faint hope of saving her, but you've been leaning into that hope, pushing forward without sleep. Now you feel your hope fading away. You can't save April. There simply isn't enough time. You must at least try to complete her mission and get the designs for the atmospheric regulator. She would want that. The Twilight Histories demands it. But the thought of losing April is depressing, and you feel tired. You see the regulator, like a giant mountain in the distance. Somewhere in its guts must be the plans, and these Taurians are taking you right to them. Good enough. If you can find them, maybe you can hide out in these swamps until the Twilight Histories pulls you out of this world. You've lived in swamps before, out on Gliese. You can do it again. Although this time, having a killer robot hunting you rather than protecting you is an added inconvenience. This is a plan. It's not a great plan, but it's a plan. And yet still you can't relax. The cold sweat keeps coming. Your heart is beating. April, your client. Forget client. She's the only other human being in this entire universe, save you. What if you get stuck here? What if the Twilight Histories doesn't pull you out? What if they can't find you on Venus? The thought terrifies you. Being stuck in a universe where you're the only human. You've been in that situation before, and it nearly drove you insane. There has to be a way. There just has to be a way to save her. So, you guys have been to the virtual state before, right? You've been inside the egg?
You say. They both nod.
What's it like?
It's hard to comprehend, Sampras says. They've rebuilt their world so thoroughly and in such a complex way that it's hard to even understand. It's vast, it's intricate, exhausting. I can't describe it. You'll find out soon enough. You ponder this different world. Think of games you've played, virtual games. They're immersive, completely immersive. Sometimes you hook them into your chip and it kind of rechannels your brain into a computer simulation, so you lose all your motor skills and have the feeling of being reborn in a different world. It must be like that. But the games were really just simulations built by programmers, maybe over the course of a few years. The virtual world the ancient Taurians live in has apparently been built up over 20 million years. No wonder your fisherman friend can't describe it.
You said earlier that the ancient ones in the virtual state have forgotten where they come from.
Yes, we believe so.
So when you go into the egg, what do they make of you?
They must assume we're part of their world.
But you're not. Have you tried explaining it to them?
Yes, but let's put it this way. If you were to forget your origins and someone from the world outside came here and tried to tell you that you're really from over there, you might think they were insane.
Okay, right. I get your point.
When we visit them, they are as powerful as gods, while we are as insignificant as insects, or worse. We are nothing, motes of dust. For a mote of dust to get the attention of a god is difficult. Even recognizing traces of them is difficult for us.
Traces? What do you mean by that?
Well, imagine you were the size of a one-celled amoeba, and you somehow crawled onto my tail. From your perspective, you would think you were on some sort of surface, though you would have no clue that it was a tail, much less a part of a larger being, a being that was far beyond you in strength and intellect. And I, for my part, wouldn't even notice you. You would be too small, even for my senses to detect. So you see, it's all a matter of perspective. When we enter their world, we search for traces of them. But even if we think we've found them, how should we proceed? How would an amoeba communicate with a Taurian, and vice versa? You see the dilemma. But the differences could be much vaster than even that.
What do you mean?
The bridge to Gap could be as vast as a cell in a Taurian, or a cell in a galaxy. Or it could be even more unbridgeable, like a higher dimension and a lower dimension.
Wouldn't a creature from a higher dimension be able to see a creature from a lower dimension, but not the other way around?
You are smart for your size, little human. That is probably true. A creature from a higher dimension might be able to see a creature from a lower dimension, but a creature from a lower dimension will only see a higher dimensional being in a fractured way, if at all.
Traces.
Yes, traces.
So it might be that these ancient ones, as you call them, can sense you as clear as day, but you can only see them in a fractured sense. That might explain why it's so difficult for you to see them.
Yes, that may be so. But then, how could we tell?
You could ask them.
How? Because you've forgotten there's also the element of scale. They might be able to sense us, but that doesn't mean they'll notice us.
Then we have to get them to notice us.
Again, how?
From my experience, if you want to get noticed, find out what's important to them and break it. Just a little bit. You'll get noticed pretty fast. Is there anything we could break?
Sampras and Rama chuckle, but they look concerned.
Oh, I'm serious. You guys have a better idea?
They don't answer.
So how does the tunnel work exactly? Zambras looks to Rama, as though nudging her to speak. She clears her throat.
I think I can answer that. When you enter the tunnel, you're put to sleep. An imprint of your conscious mind is created in a digital format. It's this digital imprint that enters the tunnel. It passes through a door directly into the nest egg, and then you're inside the virtual state. When you're done, your digital imprint returns back through the door, back to the atmospheric regulator where the imprint is, stamped onto your brain, I suppose. This ensures the continuity of your consciousness.
What? That's crazy. So it's not actually me that goes in through the tunnel, but a copy of me?
I suppose so, though you'd never be able to tell the difference.
Well, what about my soul?
Oh, what's that?
It's me, like the spirit part of me.
I don't understand.
Well, there's your brain, and then there's your soul. Don't you have a concept of a soul here?
I'm not sure, really, she says and looks up at Zambros.
Could you explain what a soul is? Zambros says.
Oh, that's a tough question. I'm no philosopher, but basically I think it's your essence.
Your essence?
Yeah, like your spirit, or your essence. When you die, it's the thing that keeps going. It's basically you, but the purest part.
Zambros furrows his brow.
By soul, do you mean consciousness?
Yeah, I think so, but it's separate from your brain. There's your body and brain, and that's the physical part of you, and then there's your soul, which is spiritual.
What is spiritual?
Well, like I say, there's the physical world, and then there's the spiritual world. Look, I don't know. That's just how they explain it. It's a human thing, and I'm not even sure how it works, or even if it's real.
Zambros rose for a while in silence. You lean against his nets and try to relax and clear your head. You hear the sounds of dinosaurs braying in the distance, the deep, sonorous whistling of oversized swamp reeds in the wind, the buzzing of Herculean insects.
What is consciousness but a strange loop of endless hierarchies? Zambros says, interrupting your thoughts.
Huh? I'm not sure what you just said.
You are concerned you will lose yourself in the tunnel.
I'm not even sure I want to go in that thing, to be honest. Not if I'm going to mess around with my mind.
You are thinking, yes?
My thinking? Yeah, of course I'm thinking. What's your point?
What is it that is doing the thinking? You?
Yeah.
So you know you are thinking.
Yeah.
But that is not the bottom of it, because what is this you that knows that you are thinking? Are you not aware of this you?
I don't know.
You know, you know, you are thinking.
Okay, you're starting to lose me.
Have you ever seen two mirrors facing each other?
Yeah, sure.
What is the effect?
It's a bunch of images that kind of go on forever.
That is what you are, with the only difference being that the impressions loop back on themselves, creating an infinite loop. You are aware of you, are aware of you, are aware of you, and on forever. The question grows tiresome, but the answer is never boring. The answer is you. And that is very important to you.
Well, maybe that's what the soul is.
What is important in defining you is not just the point of awareness that travels around the loop, but the loop itself. It is a kind of machine that makes your consciousness.
What do you mean?
You are a theorem that's also a paradox. Without the paradox, the questions and answers would come to an end. And that would end your existence.
Wait, you're reminding me of something. Back in my world, an old native guy said that the world rests on the back of a turtle. When they asked him what was under the turtle, he said another turtle.
That's exactly it.
I figured that was just proof he didn't know what he was talking about.
It's proof that he has a deeper understanding than you know.
So you're saying that's all consciousness is? It's just a paradox.
The paradox is animated. It's like a computer program that, once run, is unable to come to a conclusion before it finds itself in a loop. What makes it conscious is that the program realizes it's in a loop. It wakes up.
Huh, that's deep. It's how consciousness works, nothing more. All right, but how do you fit infinity inside a brain?
Sampras looks like he's about to answer, but pauses. You chase the point.
You can't write an infinite number of things inside a book. What makes you think you can do it inside a brain?
You can write a symbol that represents infinity inside a book.
Yeah, but a symbol needs someone to translate the symbol into something concrete, doesn't it? Sounds like what you're saying is that the symbol comes first, but that's a contradiction.
That is a real problem. You want the mind to be both complete and contradiction-free. But a paradox is neither, though it can be.
Huh?
If you wish to prove the consistency of the mind using only the mind itself must be inconsistent.
Zambros, you're a very interesting species, you know that? Are all Taurians like you?
We've been around a long time. Our civilization is old, even if we seem primitive now.
All right, so let's say all I am is this loop, a paradox that's aware of the paradox or whatever. How are you going to convince me this tunnel of yours is safe?
Imagine a slide that loops in a circle. There's a ball that goes around and around within the slide. Now imagine I cut the slide and splice it with a different slide that leads you to a different loop. When the ball tries to complete its loop, it finds itself continuing its motion somewhere else, within a completely different loop.
Are you saying the ball's my soul, and the slides are different bodies?
What I'm saying is, as long as the loop continues, your conscious mind continues. Likewise, if the loop ends, so does your conscious mind. Your mind can weave between bodies or states of being effortlessly if the conditions are right. But if the conditions are wrong, if you no longer have a loop to travel, then your consciousness comes to an end. So I don't see how a soul could leave a body.
Thanks for that explanation. If no one objects, I'll keep my ball looping around my own marble run. Thank you very much.
I can see you are skeptical, but I assure you it is perfectly safe.
Maybe I can explain it differently, Rama says. The brain is a computer. It's just in a wet state. It's made out of organic material, which is wet, right? But all the processes of your brain can be mapped out and rebuilt using transistors, which is in a dry state. You could rebuild your brain piece by piece so that you never know that the changes are happening. Then you could take your dry state brain out of your body and put it into a robot or a flying ship, or a charn if you wanted to. The important thing is that your consciousness would never be interrupted. It would always be you, even though the material of your brain has changed.
Wait, now hold on. I thought you got the neurons you got, and once they die, you never get them back.
Well, actually, the organic material in your brain is constantly being recycled. Nothing in your brain is older than a month. So, if you wanted to be really methodical, you could just replace the organic parts of your brain as they die. Though that would be pretty onerous.
Okay, but what about my soul, supposing Zambros is wrong and I actually have one?
Let's say you convert my brain into a bunch of transistors, so I don't even notice, then put it into the body of a Jaron. What happens to my soul?
If what you mean by soul is something separate from the physical body that somehow carries your essence or spirit, as you said, I'm not really sure that exists. But if it does, why wouldn't it follow your conscious mind wherever it goes? If it's not physical, why would it have a bias towards certain compounds and not others? Why would it care if the mechanism of your brain is wet or dry? Seems to me your true essence is your consciousness.
Doesn't that go against what Zambros here just said? He said the marble run is as important as the marble.
I also said your loop can be spliced into another loop, which is the same as changing your organic brain for one built out of transistors, as Rama is saying.
All right. You guys seem to have figured it all out. But I'm still not comfortable with this. Something seems off.
It is the fear of the unknown. Until you experience it, it will always be a theory to you. And a theory will remain disquieting until it has been proved through experience. Your head is hurting. Distracting yourself with philosophical ideas seemed fun for a while, but now it has just made you anxious. You're anxious about the netbots, you're anxious about the tunnel, but mostly you're anxious about April. Zambros looks thoughtful as he rows with his long pole. You hear screeching in the distance as some flying dinosaur calls to its kin. The sun is beginning to set, casting Venus in a haze of golden yellow. It's quite beautiful. Like being surrounded in a vast, glittering golden cave. Why not spend a moment quieting the endless loop of your anxieties and enjoy this magical place? You're on Venus, a terraformed Venus, and you're hanging out with talking dinosaurs. High above, you see motions in the sky. It's the flying terrors, the ships of the Jarans. They're disappearing one by one. Look, you say.
Yes, they are on the move.
Are they heading to Earth?
Most likely.
How long will it take them to get there?
If they left now, they are there now.
So the war has begun?
Undoubtedly.
Do you think the Jarans will win this time?
Perhaps.
But we're going to be in the virtual state, in the egg. What if the Jarans destroy it? Would that kill us?
If the egg is destroyed, everything inside the egg is destroyed.
And that's a big risk.
Yes, you are right. It may not be worth the risk.
I already didn't want to go. I'm really not wanting to go now.
Zambros stops rowing and gazes up at the sky.
The war is beyond our control. There is nothing we can do but wait.
We're going to wait in the swamp? What about the atmospheric regulator? You said you'd take me to it.
There is no point now.
Well, maybe there's a way for us to warn your Tarian friends inside the egg, without going in.
But why?
Don't you care about them? Isn't it worth giving it a try?
If the war has begun, then their fate is beyond our control.
The Nest told me it could recreate their bodies if they wanted, so if we somehow warned them...
That is true.
Yeah, so if we could get a message to them somehow, maybe they could get their bodies back and get out of the Nest before the Jarns destroy them.
It is possible, though the odds are against us.
There is no time, and we don't know how to communicate with them. We don't have to know all the answers now. Why don't we just get to the regulator and figure it out once we're there? We're so close.
You arrive at the regulator in the dead of night. The sky is a bowl of stars distorted and misshapen by the mirrored surface of the regulator. Zambros pulls the raft up to the walls. Rama takes something out of her pocket that looks like a random jumble of wires and circuit boards. She presses it against the quicksilver walls, which begin to melt away at its touch.
You live in huts in the swamp. Where do you get all your tech from? You say.
We scavenge it, Rama says. The nest spots are pretty messy, and there's tons of stuff in the regulators.
Stop, comes a commanding voice. You turn to see a nest bot floating above the swamp. Back away from the human Tarians. I do not wish to kill you. Zambros pulls out his gun, but the robot fires first. The laser hits him in the arm, and he drops it with a roar. The robot moves around him and Rama, trying to get a better view of you. You keep the Tarians between you. Back away, Tarians. I will shoot both of you if I have to.
Zambros grabs you and throws you through the opening in the regulator. He throws Rama, then leaps in after, landing heavily on the floor. The wall seals behind him. He tries to rise, but falters.
I think it shot me in the back, he says.
Let me look, Rama says. Follow her and see three neat holes in his back. You can't tell how deep they are, or if they're fatal. The wall begins to open. It's coming, Rama says, and tries to lift Zambros.
No,
he says, and pushes her away.
Take the human to the tunnel. I'll slow the robot down.
Before you can say goodbye to Zambros, Rama picks you up and runs into the facility with the speed of a charging rhino. It's a maze of halls, all in quicksilver, lit by a myriad of flashing colored lights. You hear Zambros' roar somewhere deep behind you. They're smashing and roaring, and then silence. You and Rama burst into a room. She slams the door, a great metal door with sliding bars.
Get in,
she says, pushing you into a great Taryan-sized tank. She tightens some gel-like straps around your body, so your feet dangle high above the ground. Your head is in a giant, helmet-like dome made for a dinosaur. I hope this works. You're so small, Rama says, attaching wires to your head. Your brain is different from ours. I really hope this works.
You're going to lobotomize me, you say.
This will at least give you a chance. The Nestbot will kill you if you're out here.
It's going to kill me if I'm in here, too.
Open the door,
comes the Nestbot's voice from beyond the iron door.
Rama, get me out of here!
Stop squirming, she says. She tightens your restraints. She then slams the capsule shut, and you get a sudden and terrifying flashback to the dungeons under New Aiken and the iron coffin. You start hyperventilating. Rama runs to a panel of blinking lights. She's doing something.
Rama, get me out of here!
The door is turning red. The bot must be blasting it with its laser from the other side. There's a hiss inside your capsule. Tubes and wires rush out to connect with your body. They snap onto your skin, and you feel sharp pain as though dinosaur-sized needles were shooting into your body. You see Rama finish what she's doing and run to the capsule next to you, throwing off her robe as she goes. A liquid is pouring into your capsule. Within moments, it's touching your feet. Then, it's above your ankles. It's warm and slimy.
What's this?
You say, but Rama can't hear you through the thick glass dome. The door to the room is now glowing red hot with a bright white center. Metal is melting away in clumps. Panic. Sheer panic. You thrash. You scream. There's nothing you can do. You might as well be back in the iron coffin, waiting for death. But this time, the promise of a quick death is not merciful. It's terrifying. That blasted robot is going to shoot you right in the heart. You grow tired. The world is going dark. Well, at least that's a mercy. You'll be asleep when it kills you. You'll be asleep. Asleep.
That was Blue Dragons Part 5 by myself, Jordan Harbor. Before you go, let me play you a sample of something. Just listen to this. I'll explain it after.
A groan morphing into a laugh erupts on your other side. Blonde dreadlocks again.
Oh, man, leave us hanging, he says.
He picks up his place card and flips it around, showing Broham the Barbarian. This one's mine, he says. I guess it's because I'm super chill and tend to wind up in hordes. He tosses his card back down on the table and says, also, it's a play on my actual name. This is perfect, though, because I have a story like yours, he says, gesturing to Anne Bonnie. It's got a pocket of weirdness and an unsatisfying ending, he laughs. Anne Bonnie gives an amusing snort. I was riding with the Huns in Attila's camp.
Well, not his exactly, but it was somewhat adjacent. Anywho, we had just come through the Carpathian Mountains, and we were organizing, waiting for stragglers, that kind of stuff. So we're doing that, and some scouts come riding back all excited. They're going on and on about some strange-looking men and hairy beasts, so of course a group of us follow them back and take a look. Broham the Barbarian, a name you're not sure you can bring yourself to call him, pauses his story to take a swig of his beer, for dramatic effect, you imagine. He says, "You'll never guess what we found." You're right, you say. Given the stories we've already heard, probably not. Neanderthals riding woolly mammoths, he says. You were right, you say. I would never have guessed that. But it was more than that, he says. It was a whole mammoth riding, mammoth herding Neanderthal society. Both species were long gone everywhere else, but somehow nestled in this area, hemmed in by mountains and rivers and deep forests, they came together and, well, it was like a symbiosis. Neither one would have survived on its own. Neither one did, actually. I've never seen anything quite like it. You imagine it for a moment, it would be quite a sight, you have to admit. Then you recall Broham had said something about an unsatisfying ending and your shoulders sag a little. You're about to bring this up when Anne Bonnie beats you to it, saying, "What about the butt?" "The butt," says Broham, "is that I got kicked by my horse only about a week after we made the discovery. I was a scouting agent at the time and they pulled me out." "Ouch," says Anne Bonnie. "Honestly, I barely felt a thing," says Broham the Barbarian. "I was out cold, then back at Twilight Histories all doped up," he shrugs. "Could have been worse." "As advertised, though," you say, "that is unsatisfying." "Yeah, if only it ended there," he says with chagrin. "I was still curious, you know, so I followed up. They sent a replacement in after me, a raw recruit, and the reports were bleak. I guess it didn't take all that long for the Huns to overrun them. Smashed the whole society to bits, killed a slew of them, took more as slaves, incorporated some into the horde. Mammoths can't keep up with horses, but they drag a hell of a baggage train. And in battle, a wall of mammoths coming at you? Forget about it. The rest fled, though, pushed into Roman territory like so many refugee groups of the time. God only knows what happened to them. This whole quirky thing, enduring for thousands of years in its own little corner, snuffed out like that." He punctuates this last remark with a snap of his fingers before continuing. "Makes me think about just how much history comes and goes and is forgotten. Everything we've ever written down or dug up is like a bucket of water pulled from the ocean. The rest is unfathomable."
What you just heard was a sample from OMG Dailies, written and produced by our new up-and-coming Twilight Histories contributor, Aaron Lund. Cool idea, eh? A world with Romans and Huns and Neanderthals riding mammoths. It's the kind of world I'd love to see expanded into its own multi-part show. And who knows, maybe I'll pick one of the stories from OMG Daily and expand it one day. There are many stories like this in OMG Dailies, and each one seems to get wilder than the last. If you want to hear this multi-part story, we just launched Part 2 in Patreon, and there are more parts to come. Support the show. Hear tons of great stories. Join us on Patreon. I'm Jordan Harbor. Thanks for listening to the Twilight Histories. Until next time, take care.